This is CliffCentral.com.
Grant, I need to make a critical business decision. We've been expanding rapidly, and my gut feel tells me that we should be investing for growth. But I need to put some financial science behind that gut feel of mine.
Don't you have a financial manager or director that can help you with that?
But isn't that rather expensive?
It doesn't have to be. Why don't you contact the finance team? They're a consultancy that can provide you with a part-time financial manager or director at a fraction of the cost of a full-time resource.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Leandi Stritter, a business coach and guide from Race Corp.
Welcome. Hello, Richard.
Nice to have you with us, as always. Thank you. Last week, we spoke about managing your receivables, the issues that you need to be considering, with Mark Essie, CEO of DebtIn. Today, we're going to have a real interesting conversation, and I'm looking forward to this one. We're going to be talking about gearing up for the Internet of Things. Is South Africa actually ready for this? Joining us in studio are our guests, Llewellyn Vance, founder of Evolve Technologies, and Brandon Stott, Technical Director and Solution Architect from Evolve as well. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hi, Richard. How are you doing?
Hi, Richard.
Nice to have you guys in studio. So, when we go the Internet of Things, IoT, everybody's eyes glaze over and they go, what are we talking about? So, what is the Internet of Things? Who's going to give us a good definition?
So I think simplistically as a concept, the Internet of Things can be described as the ability to collect data from new or existing devices defined as things, and the ability to take that data and drive new business value, ideas, innovations, and efficiencies on the back of that data.
Okay. So it's about data collection and it's about enabling, let's call it, better decision making using that data.
Exactly.
Would you say, Richard, also what I've noticed with the Internet of Things is opening up platforms for access? So what I mean by that is things like not only is information accessible, but and you're also creating an opportunity to access capital easily. You're opening up service access a lot more easily. But it's a super highway and platform where a whole bunch of data collides and is streamed and directed to a particular point, which is obviously, well, not a particular point, but big data, which is at the fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah, well, I saw a stat the other day, somebody posted, they said all the data from, I might get this wrong, 3000 BC to 2003, or 2003, so that period, let's call it 5,000 years, and they gave a however many pictorial whatevers of teradata of data we had, and then they said the same amount of data that is was produced in that, let's call it 5,000 odd years, is actually now produced every 2 days.
Extraordinary.
And I looked at this and I went, this is now what we call officially information overload. But the thing for me is that data is there, and it and I guess in a way the data has always been there.
Right.
It's just never been digitized the way it is today. I mean, the reality is, you know, where your car was parked. I mean, I always love this thing that I have on my phone. I park my car somewhere and then this message pops up. It says, updating parked car location. And I go, well, okay. So, like, I don't even know how that setting happens. So. But I'm kind of going, okay, so why does an app want to know where my car is parked? Clearly, I've got some setting that I've turned on or turned off or done something with. And at some point, if I was to look for my parked car when it got swiped and wanted to know where my car was parked, if I was in a massive shopping center or whatever, I probably, if I knew what I was doing, would probably figure out how to use this functionality properly. But I mean, here's a piece of data. I've always parked my car. I just haven't had the data point of where it is parked, captured somewhere and made accessible for me and, unfortunately, I don't know who else to use. And so I guess, in a way, you know, the data's always been there. The event has always happened. Now we've just got more information about the event and what's going to happen. It's not like there's been a massive explosion. Yes, there has been a population explosion, so we know about that. But by and large,
accessibility to that information.
Accessibility to information is now driving what we do and how we do it. Now, I mean, this whole phenomena that we're talking about, this whole data world, how's that changed how we operate and interact with the world?
So, Richard, I think we've seen a perfect storm that's a convergence of a few key elements that are really bringing forward the Internet of Things and, as Leandi said, the fourth industrial revolution. And it's really centered around data and the ability to capture data through telematics or machine-to-machine devices, the ability to transmit that data over a low-cost platform. So you've seen your cost of communication and your options of communication becoming quite wide, and the cost of actually transmitting data coming down significantly. So you have this combined effect of all of these elements coming together, and we're able to now really capture information from things that we used to always just take for granted, or you know, we kind of left them in the background, and we are able to now take that information, orchestrate that information at the edge, which is essentially at the source of the data, so compute that data at the edge, and then orchestrate that information into the cloud and use that to drive real intelligence or benefits for the user, whoever that may be, whether it's an individual such as yourself with your phone and your map, or even from an industrial application where the real benefit starts to play out by having that real-time information.
Hmm. I think the core is that previously, as you say, you hit the nail on the head, where the data has always been there. What's changed really is now we are able to unlock that data.
I was going to say the event has always been there. The correct. Data exactly. has always been, let's call it, non-digitized.
Correct.
And I mean, I always use the example. I had to look with my eyes, and it was the let's call it the analog world, as opposed to, you know, the system could look for me.
Exactly, going from analog to digital.
Yeah, but I think what one of the major things we come across on a day-to-day basis is that is quite often the data is digitized. Mm. It's just bringing it into one central place and making it an internet of things. And they're all in individual verticals, and they are all have their own OEM partners, and they are reporting to somewhere, but you can't do anything with the data. Now we're getting to a place where there's more open protocols. There's platforms that are really specializing in getting all of those various data endpoints onto one single place and reporting it through the same sort of pipeline. And again, now you can have actionable and contextualized data, because that's and the contextualized is the really important part. Where yes, you can get an energy meter, for example, get that data, but do you know when things are on and off? And generally, those devices that turn themselves on and off can tell you that, but they're telling it to two different computers. And now with the advent of the IoT side, you can do things like edge computing, and that's what Llewellyn was talking about, where it's now no longer a server that's going to do all the grunt work. You rather take the cost of having the edge computing and rather than the cloud computing, and now you can have the decisions made at the edge and minimize your communications. And you can now have all of these things. You can really just decide what the best way to do things is.
Yeah. Now, you're using some terminology. I mean, you use the word edge computing. Are you referring to the ability to effectively compute and calculate and make decisions, let's call it, at the point of presence?
Correct.
Where the data is happening, where my parked car is, as opposed to some central kind of cloud-based server
Physical world.
In the physical world.
So it's interesting. Sorry to interrupt you there, Richard, but you know, I think you know the edge computing bit is relatively still quite new, even within the Internet of Things realm. So what we've seen is it's been an interesting journey playing within this field, because you've seen products, suppliers, their focal point would be their piece of hardware, their platform, which becomes very unsustainable from a scalability perspective when you have a big property portfolio and you need to look at 5,000 energy meters. You don't have an aggregated view. You've seen this convergence where the property owners now say, okay, how do we get all of these different data streams into one interface so that we can effectively manage our portfolio and overlay the data and have that all talking to each other so we can make informed decisions? The challenge is that a lot of the current IoT play has been centered around just pushing as much data into the cloud and then doing your interconnectivity against the different cloud platforms. What we've seen as the new methodology going forward is to really compute at the edge and only send the necessary information into the cloud, which makes it a lot more affordable, number one, as well as a lot more manageable, especially from an agnostic integration perspective.
I was going to say, it sounds like that reality was going to arrive at some point, the principle of throw it all in. I mean, and we've seen that in so many, let's call it system worlds before, where it's like, give us all the data. And then we go, actually, no, we just want to, you know, the following key critical elements. I was having a good chuckle there as you were, Brendan, as you were explaining that we're talking about, you know, different platforms and interoperability and things talking to each other. I am of the age where I remember the times of things called IBM compatible IT. And the biggest joke in the industry was always, was always the comment, you know, everything's IBM compatible, but it's not. It was always the like, and I think we've gone way past those points. Yet we still see the quirks of, you know, operating platforms that don't talk to each other properly, and this crashes and that crashes, and you know, I for my sins have been a Mac, been on the Mac platform for a while, and I think, you know, I'm used to the level of stability that it's given me, and then, you know, I have to interact with other users in other environments, and all of a sudden, you know, Mac to Windows. Hold on a second. Yeah, we've got some issues. And I think we are progressing as from a technology perspective, but I think we still have all of those challenges of, and let's call it connectivity and seamless interaction around data, as opposed to now we're still fighting the application game.
Exactly.
Which has always been a little bit of a bugbear for me.
Yeah, it's definitely something that really has to be driven hard. But I think the fact that the data is so powerful and is something that businesses want so badly, it's quite easy to drive that integration and single system goal.
Yeah.
So just with regards to that, in terms of we've established that obviously big data adds value, and it's important to be able to harness that value, or to harness the information to create value, rather. Quite often, a lot of people don't know what they're looking for. So how do you get to a point, what advice would you, or insights would you like to share, possibly, with regards to people that are trying to break into this new phenomena, use data to their advantage, and are slightly overwhelmed? What are the basic points that they need to start looking at?
So really, the starting point on any engagement we have with a customer is to understand a few things. One, what is the current pain points that they're experiencing within their business?
Right.
Okay. And really get a clear view of where is it that they're struggling with real-time business-related challenges. So that's the one thing. The second part to that is to understand how have they currently digitized their business. Is there any kind of strategy, digitalization strategy that exists? Most likely it's not. You find that everything's fragmented and they haven't got a very defined strategy on how to really orchestrate and pull everything together.
Right.
And I think a lot of that can be attributed to where we are in the life cycle or this emerging market, which really the starting point was connect devices. The second part has been, okay, how do we aggregate that data? And the primary approach that most of the IoT platforms have taken is get all the data into the cloud and then integrate at that level. I think what people are realizing now is that it's quite costly and complicated to do it in that way. So, you know, we have this term that we throw around, the edge is eating the cloud, and we're going to keep coming back to that. But really what we've seen as the most progressive players in the market, what is happening is they're computing at the edge. So to come back to your question, Leandi, is it's really understand the client's need, understand what strategy is currently in place, and it's a journey. You will start normally with the most compelling need, and you'll find that as you solve that problem, you can go left or right, and really the journey, it's taking that customer down that journey and helping them to fix that within their business.
Yeah, and from a big data and machine learning and all of those really core analytics aspects, that's generally when clients, as you say, don't really know what they want to do. They know there's a problem. They know there's inefficiencies in the system. But because the system is so large and expansive that it's difficult to pinpoint exactly where the inefficiencies are, where the abnormalities is really what you try to find in the big data side. So for big data to take place, right now it does have to happen in the cloud. You still do have to aggregate that data to process it to that level. But then once you know what's optimized, that's when the computing goes back down to the edge. But that being said, the sort of most recent technologies are looking at the mesh computing, which starts taking into multiple computers and doing that large data analytics and computing on a distributed network of computers.
So the question is, do we have enough bandwidth in South Africa?
Yeah, I mean, I listen to this and I go, I can just see the amount of data. Mind you, with computing at the edge, I guess the reality is you're only transmitting what you need. So that now just, I mean, a practical question. I mean, I hear the point of computing on the edge, and then, you know, in my mind I go, okay, so you pull through certain amounts of data and information. Yes, you limit what you transmit, so that's driven by the cost of transmission and bandwidth and all this good conversation. And then I kind of go, okay, so that old space of, you know, back in the day when transmission was expensive, you only transmit the core issue. Then transmission and data manipulation became easier. Then it's like, okay, well, just give me everything and I'll run it, you know, and I'll store it. And, well, now storage is so cheap, so I can just store everything in case I need it at some point. Mm-hmm. Are we going to go through that cycle again, do you think? I mean, or is computing at the edge here to stay as an architectural construct?
Yeah, I think it's both, right?
I think it's a feedback loop where everyone takes into account what their current needs are. Then they figure out, okay, they want to store a bit more in the cloud, and they figure out maybe store a little bit less, and it really is customer dependent. But it's often not really driven by price as much as what's practical. And will you use that data? And of course, a data lake is really where you want to get to with every client. But as you say, while data storage is cheap, a data lake is not. So the data lake is your unstructured data, and that's where the machine learning can really take place. That it does depend on what data you have. If it's really structured data, then you just have a history of data, and that's not really something that's valuable. Where the machine learning, as I say, is the unstructured data and finding the structure later on. So again, I think it does depend on the use case.
It varies from market vertical to market vertical, it depends where the entity is with their strategy. It's never kind of a one shoe fits all. Definitely a combination of things, but the more efficient approach is really driven at the edge, and it just depends where the journey starts with the client. And we've seen in the market at the moment, it varies. I mean, we're dealing with some of the big logistical projects it's people that have a big asset base. It could start holistically, or it could start at a compelling need and solving that problem, and then really scaling that solution across the base and normalizing that data before it gets to the cloud.
Yeah, it's definitely a curve as to you start collecting all the data initially to figure out what you should do with it. Then you scale it down periodically and figure out, okay, I actually only need this data.
Mm.
So it's a POC, then a POV, then you actually wrote it out.
I mean, to add to this point as well, I mean, you see the emergence of new communication technologies such as Sigfox, LoRa, which really is narrow band type communication protocols. Mm. And what that means is you have packets of data being sent over a period of time instead of all of the data. Mm. So that's really been designed around driving IoT as a play, but it serves a very specific need.
Yeah, they're very small packets of data and they sort of get sent every sort of few hours. It's generally about 3 or 4 times a day. And now that's why you can't really do the data lake aspect in those sort of technologies. But again, it depends on what you have available. Yeah. If you have a solid fiber network that you're already paying for, then it goes straight to the cloud. There's no need to spend the hardware at the edge.
Mm. Yeah, look, I mean, I also, you know, we sit back and in the South African context, we always think, hey, we've got this sorted. I mean, I have an example of a business where, you know, they, when asked, you know, so what is the acceptable downtime if we're not online from a system perspective? I got the answer of, oh, no, a few hours is fine, day maybe. You know, we maybe want our email up a bit sooner, but we'll cope generally. Now, I had come out of a world of banking with a 5-9s kind of thinking, you know, got to be up 99.99999% of the time. And I listened to that and I went, okay, I'm not so sure that's a valid statement. Well, boy, the first time the link went down, I tell you, 3 minutes later, everybody was having a frothy. And I was like, we can't work, we can't do anything, this is unacceptable, we've got to fix this, this can't happen again. And I'm like, but guys, you were quite happy to be without this for 24 hours. It's been 3 minutes. And when I pointed this out, then suddenly everybody was like, no. Okay, we're going to have to revisit all of this. And now there's 15K a month spent on a microwave, you know, microwave link with a fiber.
Put fiber some business redundancy.
With a fiber. And then if all else fails, there's that ADSL line to plug in at the back of the cabinet, you know, just to get it all to happen. So I think we've moved from a world where it was okay to not have that connectivity and data instantaneously available and connected. I mean, in my home, I know the Wi-Fi is down. Not when I know it. I know it when the kids tell me the Wi-Fi is down. And I mean, it's like literally, you know, it's like flicking the trip switch, you know, on the house. You know, like the lights go out and like everybody's screaming like within seconds. You know, Wi-Fi is down, the Wi-Fi is down. Like, I didn't notice. Well, they noticed very quickly. They're all connected. I mean, I think, you know, I saw the Maslow pyramid has now been changed. It, you know, you had the normal traditional pyramid. It now has above, below the, everything else, it has Wi-Fi, and below that it has battery life. And I think that is where we have moved to as let's call it as society. We want to be connected. We have this need to be connected. And obviously as we want to connect ourselves, we want our things to be connected along with that. Yeah. Now, what is the impact? What is this? The impact of this on businesses out there? I mean, what should businesses be thinking about? I mean, I think of a number of my businesses where I go, you know, just classic things like, I remember the good old days where the guy used to arrive to take the meter reading on the photocopier. Well, nowadays you just plug the copier into the network and it does its thing. I remember, and this is now going back probably at least 10 or 12 years, one of the things that I was really proud of in my world of banking was I got the guys to move into out of the analog world into the digital machine copier space. And I pointed out to them that the copier company could actually monitor the machine and know there was a paper jam before you got to work. And they could fix the problem at 7 a.m., so by 8 a.m. when we wanted to be working, we didn't have to rely on running around and calling people and calling out technicians. And their monitoring systems had already monitored and knew what the problem was and what needed to be sorted out. And this is now, I'm talking 12 years back. And people back then were quite impressed with that kind of capability. But I mean, business today, that's just, let me say, standard. If you, if you're not having that level of service and engagement from your suppliers, you know, that, I mean, I've often, in fact, I've sat here on the show, and while I'm sitting here getting a message from a provider that provides a microwave link into one of the businesses to say, the link is down. And I'll text somebody and say, you know, please check this and that. And they'll come back and say, how did you know? And I'm like, well, the providers are monitoring 24/7, 365. And, you know, and people find this quite strange that the things are telling us what's going on. So I guess my question is, you know, in businesses, what should our things be telling us, and what should big business be expecting out there?
Yeah. I think the main thing is what are the pain points in the physical world that they have? It all gets down to, I mean, a lot of people in the industry who try to jump into the IoT side of things, they digitize everything, and then they sort of look at everything at the end of the day, okay, cool, what are we going to do with it at the end?
Right, exactly. So overwhelmed space. We're in big data, but now we don't know what the hell to do with it.
We've got all the data, we just don't know what it tells us.
I think what we do is try get the business case sorted beforehand. And it's something that you test through a POC and all that stuff, but it's always what can we solve by having more data?
Right.
Before saying, okay, what do you have to have more data? And then you can start going into expanding it, because you have a gateway there, and it's the barrier to entry is a little bit lower and all that. But again, it goes back to, in the physical world, what do you have there that can make your life simpler?
I love the word making my life simpler, because exactly. I think technology has complicated our lives so much that we actually need to use technology to simplify our worlds.
Yeah,
and that's exactly it, right? So removing manual processes from your existing business and allowing the IoT play to really self-fulfill on things that were normally managed by people and human intervention, so that you can really shift your focus to other parts of the business.
And I want to just pick up, you've made a very important point there as you said that. So you can shift your focus onto the important parts of your business.
Correct.
I think often people think, oh, here comes the technology to take away people's jobs. And I go, yes, technology is going to take away the mindless stuff so that your people can do the really nice, interesting things that really help them grow as individuals and make them feel fulfilled as individuals, as opposed to, you know, do this to their, you know, move. I always use the illustration of back in the days of the army, they used to say the guys used to move a pile of sand from one point to another point to move it back again the next morning.
Right.
And I'm like, why do we do this in business? You know, exactly. And we do it. We do do it. We know this.
Yeah. To give you a practical example, I mean, we see a lot of scenarios where you have these decision makers that are responsible for a specific part of the business, and they've got all of these data sets that are coming in, but they're fragmented, and they're fragmented according to a specific asset type. It can be fragmented according to the region. And if he has a budget of 50 million, which he needs to use to solve a critical pain point within the business, the biggest challenge you'll see is that he cannot make an informed business decision. So he's got all of this data coming in. If he wants to decide how to spend his budget on which challenge he has to take all of this data, he has to try and push it through an engine, okay, and hopefully it comes out with something that makes sense, and against that he can then decide how to spend his budget. But what you often find is that the data is corrupted. You'll find that the whole exercise of doing that takes about a week to 2 weeks, possibly even longer, depending how big the data set is. And the point is, if that can happen automatically, if he can have a dashboard that automatically gives him real-time insight, and he can then say, okay, do some filter checks, and he can make a clear, concise business decision as to where he's spending his money and why, that changes the nature of the business, and it automatically makes it more proactive and less reactive.
Mm. Yeah, and I think one of the major things that we really try to get businesses to focus on is to understand that they need to look at everything through a sort of a fresh lens every time, because simple things like the classic you call IT and say, have you tried turning it off and on? There are guys employed who still have to go do that. They have to go to site and press a button and it works again, and where you can actually just digitize that quite easily and suddenly have a return on investment very quickly. What happens is you accept that's part of that's the nature of the business, and so that's just how it is. Mm. Whereas if you just look at it from an innovation lens and not accepting that it's the norm.
That's the norm.
I think that's the important part.
Gentlemen, it's been great having you with us. That was Llewellyn Vance and Brendan Stott from Evolve Technologies. Next up is our business conversation. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.